Let's go to Pete Hegseth. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. Bring it up a notch.
You had a piece that you'd written for Fox News, a lot of speculation that President Trump is going to offer sort of an olive branch across the aisle tonight, specifically when it comes to immigration. But you put a piece out there yesterday kind of warning him, don't take this opportunity and end up with a bad deal. Elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I can't warn the president. No one warns the president, but I try to give my sense is, listen, I understand what he's trying to do. He wants to make a deal. You can't get an immigration deal in the Senate without 60 votes, which requires Democrats. You know Chuck Schumer is going to resist. How can you pull off 6 or 7 so-called moderate Democrats? The problem is Democrats haven't shown any inclination whatsoever to do anything but resist.
Yeah.
They won't even take debate on this initial offer. And for Republicans, especially Republicans that supported this president and on his immigration policy, listen, there's a lot of frustration. He promised amnesty, full citizenship, for twice as many DACA recipients as was originally ever discussed. So putting that aside, I think the concern so many of us have is Dems might jump at a deal at some point, and everyone will feel good about a deal. And then pretty soon we've got a deal where all the amnesty happens, and then the security stuff and the end of the visa lottery program and the curtailing of chain migration happens later or doesn't happen at all, because that's how Washington works. So my argument in the piece is timing is really important. You've got to get the security measures assured and upfront before you craft the pathway to citizenship, or pathway to legalization is what I would prefer, no citizenship.
Right.
So that you reassure those people that any deal isn't going to backfire, because we've been hoodwinked before that amnesty won't happen and security will, and it doesn't. So my argument is, when you say it in the State of the Union, yeah, the 24/7 news world, you know, means information flows no matter what, but from the podium of the State of the Union, it does hold more weight, and I just hope he doesn't double down on this is the deal, that it's got to be citizenship and it's got to be 1.8, and we're going to do it, because I think that might cause some problems on the right side of the spectrum.
Yeah, and I agree, and it's part of the it's a frustration, and it's the difficulty of talking about this issue, because for me, like with the little rant that I went on with Bob, there's a lot of stipulations on my end for that. I'm not going to be supportive of grant. I'm with you. It needs to be sort of a pathway, not citizenship, for these individuals, but not that massive number that was thrown out by the president, and not without the stipulation that we do get the border security that we need. And so there's a lot of moving parts and facets to that, and it's tough because you get into this sort of the sweeping generalities of it, and it doesn't work that way.
That's true.
I like the fact the president keeps putting Democrats in this position, though, because it shows, just exposes just how hypocritical they are.
It's true. I mean, I just don't know why I don't know why he started with such a massive giveaway, which makes sort of conservatives gasp and say amnesty for twice as many as we thought, three times as many as Obama ever offered.
Yeah.
At the same time, he does expose their hypocrisy. They immediately say, no, this is a racist bill. Make America white again. We can't take this. This is horrible. The problem is, like, how many times do you have to expose Democrats for the hypocrites they are? Like, we already know that.
Yeah.
We already know they don't want to govern. We already know they want to resist. We already know they want to impeach him. They're never going to give him a win. So I love showing more of that, but I'd rather drive a real policy wedge between the far left, which controls the Democratic Party, and those senators up for re-election in tough states in 2018. Let's not do giveaways to get them on board. Let's force the political imperative for them to cross the aisle and join a common sense bill that secures our country. Forget about the hyperbole. So I think hopefully this is just an opening bid, and the president can point out the obstruction, craft it differently, and we can, kind of like the Freedom Caucus made the health care bill better, that this process sharpens the iron and the bill gets stronger.
And we haven't said this in a while, Pete Hegseth says, but it's worth noting that we are in such uncharted territory across the board. I mean, I'm so thankful, and we're all so blessed to do what we do right now, because we've never been in a political climate like this. I mean, maybe it's been like this way in the past, but certainly for me, I think for us, we've never been in a situation with a president like this, with the controversies that are going on right now. I mean, it is such uncharted territory.
Well, yeah, isn't there like a memo out there or something that's going on?
Yeah, we're getting to that.
I mean, of course. I mean, what I would say is embrace the chaos, use the chaos, ride the chaos. Washington needs chaos. Let them panic. Let them freak out.
Yeah.
Break the protocol, not as it pertains to confidentiality or anything like that, but disrupt until they feel so uncomfortable, like Andrew McCabe, that they've got to quit. Because that's what they're counting on, is us going away or us not pressing the issue. And I think President Trump has fortified those of us who understand there's a problem deep inside our government to keep shining the light and not stop because there's no reason to. And Victor Chavis Hansen has an op-ed. I haven't read the whole thing, but the title is, you know, it all comes down to they thought that it was a sure thing that Hillary Clinton was going to win because none of this was going to matter. And then she lost, and now it all matters. And the fight, just we just have to not relent. I mean, don't listen to the left-wingers who say this is about partisanship. It's not. It's about restoring our government and trust in our government.
It's weird to think about the alternate reality that we'd be living in right now had Hillary Clinton won.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, and none of the issues that have dominated our discourse and our coverage and our culture for the last year, I don't think any of them would have come to light. And I'm even going so far as the whole Me Too movement and the ousting of Harvey Weinstein and everything that happened and all the circumstances around that. I think all of that, the impetus, the catalyst for all of that was Trump winning the election.
I mean, we'd be arguing, you know, whether or not people are going to watch Fox News or Trump TV. You know? I mean, that's what it would have been. And then we'd be talking about single-payer health care and, you know, amnesty for everybody no matter what. Taxes certainly wouldn't be cut. We wouldn't be having this renaissance. I mean, it is night and day. What a reminder of how important elections are, which is why I'm always frustrated by the talk of, well, turnout's going to be dampened in 2018 for Trump supporters. It's like, are you kidding me?
Oh, my gosh.
If you supported this president, you should run to the polls in 2018, no matter what, to pull the lever for the continuation of this agenda if you like what you're watching. Otherwise, the other side's going to be energized, too. So, yeah, that's a... Someone's read a book about that.
What do you think, getting over to this little thing, the FISA memo, first off, the first question on this is, what do you think the likelihood that Andrew McCabe leaving his post is connected to the fact that Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI, read that memo on Sunday? Is that connected in your mind?
I mean, 99% maybe. I don't know. I mean, the timing does not appear to me at all to be coincidental. This is a guy who's taken slings and arrows for 8 months. His name has been all over the media. He's revealed to have used his position more than likely to advance one-sided partisan agenda, or at least be party to it. And so now that a memo is going to be released that, from what I hear, does include his name, his name's been included in text messages, it was untenable for him to be in that position. And I'm sure if you're looking to clean out a department and restore faith, how you keep the very men and women who were potentially party to what was effectively partisan spying and surveillance for perceived partisan gain. So I'm going to be really interested in actually reading the ins and outs of this memo, what's released publicly, and drawing my own judgments from it. But I think he won't be the last name to step down or receive a new position. Hey, thankfully, guys, he'll get to keep his pension no matter what. That's great.
The first comments about that memo were pretty extreme for those that had seen it. Yeah. Your understanding, I mean, how big of a deal do you think this is going to end up being?
I don't know. I mean, I hope people aren't overplaying their hand. Again, I haven't seen it. I only know characterizations of it. I had the good fortune of sitting next to Rachel Campos Duffy on Fox and Friends for 8 hours this weekend. Her husband, a congressman, had seen it. He didn't reveal anything to her, but the one thing he did say was, you know, maybe people are being a little bit hyperbolic about it, you know, but it all depends on your perspective. I mean, one person can read it and say, well, that sounds really, really bureaucratic. And another person can read it and read through the bureaucratic language and see how, in you know, how terrible and divisive and incendiary it is. So I don't think we know, but I think enough people have said enough things based on seeing it that it's going to demonstrate a level of political influence in our surveillance, which in and of itself is a scandal, regardless how deep it goes.
Well, one last thing before we let you go here, you're gonna be back here in Minnesota. We're doing some work for Fox and Friends coming up, right?
Yes, we're doing some stuff for Fox and Friends. We're going to do a number of events. I'll be hosting the show over the weekend, and then we're going to be doing a diner on Friday morning in Stillwater at the Oasis River Cafe. So if you've seen the diners we do on Fox and Friends, we'll be there Friday morning from 5 to 8 a.m. So listeners who are interested, come on out.
Is this in conjunction with any Super Bowl coverage? Because I don't know if you heard, but the Super Bowl's here.
I've tried to block it out. That airport is the most depressing experience of your life. The reminder of the Super Bowl is everywhere. You just drop your head and walk.
Not bold.
Not bold. So that was the Oasis Cafe in Stillwater?
The River Oasis Cafe in Stillwater on Friday.
Cool.
Doing a little breakfast with friends.
Yep. All right. That sounds like fun. Pete Hegseth, always a pleasure, man. Good chatting with you.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Talk to you next week.